Speaking on the program at this time is Brother James W. Boyd.
That were given to encourage the persecuted Christians, to show to them God's concern, God's care, God's provision, how that God would protect them, ultimate victory on their behalf. Continuing the theme that we saw in the seven letters that the Lord had sent to the seven churches of Asia, we repeat the theme of Revelation: victory belongs to those who are faithful in Christ. Well, when we come to chapter 8, we now open the seventh seal. And the seven seals of the seventh seal consist of the blowing of seven trumpets. We will blow four of these trumpets in chapter 8. We'll blow two more of them in chapter 9. In chapter 10 and part of 11, we will have another intermission between the sixth and seventh trumpet, like we had an intermission between the sixth and seventh seal. So this gives us some order of what to expect. And then the latter part of chapter 11 gives us the blowing of the seventh seal. So we tonight are going to read what we would, or what we can learn as to the meaning of the blowing of seven trumpets. I suggest to you, first of all, that the fact that there are seven trumpets mentioned, or that this is presented in terms of a trumpet, keeping in mind that what we find here in Revelation is highly symbolic, figurative language, representative terms, that the idea of a trumpet is something that is very attention-getting, unmistakable, very clear, and to be perceived and understood. So with that, let's have the introduction before the first trumpet, and the introduction is in the first six verses. And when he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour. Personally, I don't know that I could suggest to you what was the significance of the silence for a half hour. I'll pass along to you what I have read from those who have suggested meanings, that here was something that was anticipated. And to enhance that anticipation and the expectancy, and to gain further attention, this very brief period of a half hour, things were just more or less held in suspense, and you were now waiting for what would follow. Maybe so. Nonetheless, there was this silence for a half hour. And when I saw the seven angels which stood before God, and to them were given seven trumpets, and another angel came and stood at the altar, having a golden censer, and there was given unto him much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. Now let's notice, we can get the meaning of this incense, because we're told in the next verse. And the smoke of the incense, which came with the prayers of the saints, ascended up before God out of the angel's hand. This may call our attention back to the worship in the Mosaic system in the tabernacle, later the temple, where the two compartments were in that temple, the holy place, the most holy place, the most holy place being separated from the holy place by a curtain. In the most holy place was the special presence of God there upon the Ark of the Covenant. Immediately inside the holy place was an altar of incense, which they would ignite daily. And those that incense would burn, and the smoke of it would go into the through the curtain into the presence of God. And here it is used as a symbol of the prayers of the saints. That's the Christians, these persecuted Christians here upon this earth. Prayers of the saints going up before God. The impression that I would suggest to you is that what we're going to find here in the blowing of these seven trumpets is in answer to the prayers of the saints. God is going to present through John, through this blowing of the trumpets, through these symbols, the prayer of the saints with the answer. Verse 5, and the angel took the censer and filled it with fire of the altar and cast it into the earth. And there were voices and lightnings, thunderings and lightnings and earthquake. And the seven angels which had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. What might be the significance of the voices and the thunderings and the lightnings and the earthquake? I would only suggest it might mean that here was to be an awesome, terrible event that was to take place. Something that would be stupendous in nature. Anybody have any suggestions about any of these symbols in these first six verses? If you'd like to suggest, why, feel free to suggest, correct, contradict, or whatever. But now we do come to the seven trumpets. Trumpet number 1, verse 7. The first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth, and the third part of the earth was burnt up, and the third part of the trees was burnt up, and all green grass was burnt up. One thing I can certainly get from this, I think, with relative confidence, word term that comes to my mind is, here is a picture of devastation. Notice the term, hail, very destructive. Fire, mingled with blood. It wouldn't be a beneficial fire. It would be a fire that would cause bloodshed. And it was cast upon the earth. It was cast against the earth. Now, as I have suggested to you once before, many, many times, likely, or you notice all the loopholes I leave myself in these things, suggest, likely, maybe so, best I can do on it, that earth would stand for the land of Palestine, where they were. Sea would represent the Roman Empire, which was across the sea from Palestine. There are some good reasons to think that, and it does seem fitting, but here again, we have to recognize a certain portion of speculation. When it says a third part of the earth was burnt up, and then the trees and all the green grass, it was devastation even against the vegetation of the land. There would be the, what we would call today, the deforestation of this territory, whatever it referred to. Well, earthquake is mentioned up there as one of the things that were about to take place. But here was, in some forms, as far as we can tell, we don't know exactly what form here, but forms of destruction would come upon the land. I think that's a reasonably summarized statement of what this first trumpet is. The second angel sounded, trumpet 2. And as it were a great mountain, that'd be a great power, burning with fire, was cast into the sea. And the third part of the sea became blood. And the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died, and the third part of the ships were destroyed. If sea refers to the Roman persecuting power, Here was a vision that would show also devastation to come against the Roman Empire. That was a co-persecutor to the Lord's church, or soon to be a persecutor of the Lord's church. And there would be devastation against whatever is represented by the sea. And the destruction of these ships, it seemed it would be the destruction of commerce and of trade and the affairs of the nation, the economy of the nation would be totally disrupted and uprooted. So far, with the first two trumpets, we see nothing but gloom and doom and destruction and despair to be administered against certain powers and certain forces. We'll go to the third one. And the third angel sounded, and there fell a great star from heaven. Now this would be the fall of some ruler, some authority, some dignitary, the star representing this power, burning as it were a lamp. And it fell upon the third part of the rivers and upon the fountains and the waters. And the name of the star is called Wormwood. And the third part of the waters became wormwood, and many men died of the waters because they were made bitter. The word translated wormwood here means bitter. Here was dignitaries and powers and authorities that were indeed rightfully named that which was bitter, and there would come devastation again upon the rivers and the fountains, even indeed the water supply of the people. Earlier the vegetation would be destroyed, the water supply would be polluted, the dignitaries and powers would fall. And we see these symbolic terms then of a complete destruction of these nations represented by earth and sea. The fourth trumpet. And the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars. Keep in mind, sun, moon, and stars, like in the Old Testament, represented kings, princes, governments. Here would be the overthrow of such things. So as the third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and night likewise. These people that had been in power, these authorities that had instigated the persecutions against the Christians, their day was coming. God's wrath and retribution against them was about to be administered. They would not stand. They would be brought low. The economies and powers that they represented would be cast into darkness because they would cease to be. They would no longer be able to conduct themselves as they had formerly done. And I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst of the heaven, saying in a loud voice, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels which were yet to sound." The first four trumpets were obviously statements of woe. No question about that. Nothing but devastation. I keep using this word devastation because I can't think of something else any better to say. Here was devastation that was to come. And in this chapter, as it closes, there have been four trumpets that showed that, and at the end of it he says, yeah, and there's three more to come too. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Three more to come. Three more woes against these powers. I would suggest, and I think it means, that a sizable portion of the land, a sizable portion of the people, would be suffering. Not any one thing would annihilate. Well, first of all, the whole nation wouldn't be completely, everybody in it wouldn't be completely brought to death. It'd be survivors. But a large portion of them, you just think of a third part of the United States being wiped out. Now that'd be a pretty big devastation, wouldn't it? And then again, another third part. And then again another third part, and maybe even four to five third parts. If the idea is this would be a tremendous suffering of those against whom these things were to be directed. Not literally 33 1/3%, but a sizable segment of the country, of the vegetation, of the water, would be the victim of this. Brother Mason, that's what I think we can do. And in my own mind, I think this is pointing to, right here, primarily, the two things in order. One, the destruction of the Jewish economy when Jerusalem was destroyed by the Romans in 70 A.D., which was a short while after this was written, according to my understanding. And later, the ultimate destruction of the power of Rome to destroy Christianity. Yes, Mount Megiddo was one of the places that some of the Jews, the very strong patriotic Jews, fled when the Romans came. Have you ever read the story of that? Oh, that's inspiring. It almost makes you want to be a Jew. Oh yeah, I think it's historically true. They were people who fought to the very last against the Roman power. And you see, this all occurred in and around the year AD 70. And this is what it's talking about. I think it's talking about the same thing to which the Lord referred when He gave the prophecies of the destruction of Jerusalem as recorded in Matthew 24. And it's just doing it in symbolic language. Now, we raise this question right here. It might be a good point. Why didn't He just say so? The Romans are coming against Jerusalem and they're going to do this, that, and the other. Why didn't He just spell it out? And there were some He didn't want them to know. Who do you want them to know? Who? You start over here, you know, like a crane and an owl up in the tree, one or the other. Who? He wanted the church to know it. He didn't want the Jews to know it. He didn't want the persecutors to know it. He didn't want Rome to know it. He wanted the Christians to know it. So He couched all of this in language that would draw upon certain things that the Christians could know and could reflect back on the words of Christ and other things that could be explained to them by inspired men. And they would know. As it has been sometimes said, it's rather simplistic, but it's sometimes said, it's almost written in code language. And those that knew the code could get it, and those that couldn't, wouldn't. We'll go back here to if you go back and study again, and we won't, the sixth seal, because we're on the seventh seal now, the sixth seal, it was one of destruction. And the seventh seal in the blowing of these trumpets seems to only, it may appear at first to be redundant and superfluous and unnecessary, but repetitious, but it emphasizes the coming disaster that would befall those who took it upon themselves to raise themselves to be enemies of the people of God. It's a serious thing to be an opponent of people of God. And that we learn in this too. And they were going to receive their just recompense. And that's what this was being written to the Christians to tell them, you hold on. Justice will win, righteousness will be victorious, the persecutors will be annihilated, and you will be the winner if you just remain faithful. That's the plea of the book of Revelation. And I think that's what these trumpets are trying to tell them about the coming destruction upon their opponents. Okay? Chapter 9. We got two more trumpets in chapter 9. And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth. Star, again, would refer to some ruler or some kingdom or some power or some dominion. This is used of the king of Babylon back in, like this, in the book of Isaiah. And it is identified, the king of Babylon is identified as a star. So we would rightly determine that it refers to some ruler, some power. Here it may well refer to those who were the rulers of the Jewish government, the ones that were instigating the persecution. I don't know which one or to whom that would be. But to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. Now, I've only seen one bottomless pit in my life. And that was when I was trying to feed my oldest son. Obviously, this is symbolic, isn't it? Bottomless, there is no such thing as a pit that's bottomless. It just means that once you fall into it, there's no way to get out of it. The bottomless pit, I suggest you, refers to hell itself. And we're going to see, to couch this in as proper language as I can, the torments of hell, as it were, to be poured out against these adversaries of Christians. That's what's getting ready to break loose. And now notice, the key to the bottomless pit, he could open it, and he opened the bottomless pit. Note what came out. And there arose a smoke out of the pit, and smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and the air were darkened by reason of the smoke of the pit. You're talking about air pollution. We really got pollution here. Great pollution against the land coming from this great bottomless abyss. And notice what else came out. And there came out of the smoke locusts upon the earth. Now, locusts devour. I believe we've mentioned this maybe in studies before about grasshoppers and locusts, and they will sweep over territories, and sometimes even in this country, but it's not an uncommon thing in the continent of Africa, I understand, to have these great hordes of, just like a marching army of locusts that just devours everything in its path. So, whoever or whatever locust refers to, it's bad news for whoever it is they're coming against. And unto them was given power. Notice this power. As the scorpions of the earth have power. Poisonous things that would sting, hurt, kill. They would have that kind of power. And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree. Who were they going to hurt? Notice, but only those men which have not the seal of God in their forest. That's who they were going to hurt. So we know that this pollution that would come from the bottomless pit out of, as it were, hell itself, producing these devouring locusts, would be against those who were not sealed of God. Now if you go back over here into the earlier chapter, you will remember, I believe it's what was it, just exactly. Chapter 7 and verse 3. All of this devastation that was there was to be held up until there could be the sealing of certain ones, until we have sealed the servants of God in their forest, until there was an identification of the people of God that were to be spared. And now here come these locusts, these devourers, and who were they going to devour? Not the ones that were sealed, not God's people. It was going to be against those who were not God's people. And to them it was given that they should not kill them. Now they're not going to completely annihilate and wipe out these persecutors, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And their torment was as the torment of a scorpion when it striketh a man. Have any of you ever been hit by a stingray? Yeah, the reason I ask that, people have. I hadn't either. Have you? You ever get popped by one? Yeah, I've heard about it. The reason I ask about a stingray, I heard there's some in the Atlantic Ocean. That's the reason I always do my wading in the Cumberland River. They can be deadly. They can be poisonous. They can be inflict such tremendous pain. I saw on a National Geographic thing one time, about where a stingray had hit a swimmer. And my, how he swelled up. All over. Nearly died. And I get that idea of a scorpion. And these people, they would be tormented. They wouldn't die. They were just being tormented. Now, it says for 5 months. That means for a certain period of time. I don't know exactly why necessarily the 5 months. It was limited anyway. They would be tormented. And notice how tormenting the torment would be. Did you follow me? How tormenting the torment would be. And in those days, verse 6, men shall seek death and rather die than continue to survive. And shall not find it. They shall desire to die, and death shall not flee them. They would think, with all of this, we would be better off dead. But that wouldn't be the case. Certainly not with all of them. Now, who are these locusts? To what does this refer? The shape of the locusts were like unto horses. Now, no locust looked like a horse. But the idea is this devouring power would be like horses. Horses were used in war. They were battle animals. Unto horses prepared in the battle. And on their heads were, as it were, crowns of gold. They had great glamour and array and authority. Their faces were as the faces of men. So this indicates an army. These locusts referred to the coming of an army. And they had hair as the hair of women. That sounded like a rock and roll band to me, but there could be something else. Okay, that's another subject. One has suggested that it is like the canker worm, with which I have no familiarity, whatever. But it is that which can devastate vegetation, and it is a very hairy thing. It's not like a little old caterpillar, although they can be pretty bad, you know. I guess some of you nursery people know more what that could be. But be long and fuzzy and devouring. And their teeth were as the teeth of lions. This army would destroy. It had power. And they had breastplates, as it were, breastplates of iron. And the sound of their wings was as the sound of chariots of many horses running to battle. All of this is a picture of an army coming, isn't it? They've got their chariots, they've got their breastplates, they have their armor, they are powerful, they are destructive, they're prepared for battle, they're like horses. Where are these locusts coming from? They're coming as emissaries, if you will, from that smoke that had come out of the bottomless pit. They were as from hell itself, as far as these people were concerned. And it would torment them to where they'd rather die than continue to live. Well, God, in the Old and New Testament, God would often use wicked nations and wicked people to punish other wicked people. God used Assyria to punish northern Israel. God used Babylon to punish southern Judah. God used the Medes and the Persians to punish Babylon. And none of them were righteous. He just used wicked men to punish wicked men. And, well, I think it most certainly is. The devil fighting the witch, as we sometimes say. You don't know which one's the devil and which one's the witch. Well, they're both just as evil as they can be. You know, that's what a lot of people said during the time when Hitler was fighting Stalin. Man, let's send them both armed. Maybe they'll wipe one another out. And it's sort of that same person right here, you see. But here comes this army. And they had tails like unto scorpions. There's Brother Pennington, scorpions again. And there were stings in their tails, and their power was to hurt men 5 months. I don't know the significance of 5 months. A limited time with great ferocity, I would think. And they had a king over them, which is the angel of the bottomless pit. He's a servant and the messenger of the devil, whose name in Hebrew tongue is Abaddon, but in the Greek tongue hath his name Apollyon. Abaddon and Apollyon are words that simply mean destroyer. So here they come, under their leader, this army that would wreak havoc against the persecutor, and they would destroy as they come. Now, verse 12, he said, one woe is past, and behold, there come two woes more hereafter. Wow, that woe was enough. That ought to just shake them to the very soles of their feet. That was the fifth trumpet. And there are two more woes to come. One more woe here in this chapter, one more trumpet. Verse 13. And the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar which is before God, saying to the sixth angel which had the trumpet. Now notice, this is the release of authority by the voice of God. It's coming from the horns of the throne of God. Loose the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates. Now notice here something, folks. Here's Palestine. Here's the land where the Jews lived, where they were persecuting the Christians. And one of the borders into that land was the Euphrates River. You go back here just a chapter or so, to chapter 7, verses 1 and 2. Devastation was about to be poured out, and they said, you angels, hold us back now for a little while, just for a brief season. Hold it back. We're not ready to turn it loose yet. We've got to seal the children of God. We've got to identify them. We've got to provide for them. We've got to protect them. You hold us back here at the border. When invading armies like Assyria, like Babylon, like Rome, when they would come to conquer the land of Palestine because of the topography of the land, because of the pathways and the mountains and the access to the land, that's the way they would come. They would cross the Euphrates River. All of this devastating power had been stopped and held up at the northern border of the land for a while. And that was to be until God's people were provided for. But now, he says, loose the four angels which are bound there. Turn them loose! The time had come for it to come. And notice how he presents that in verse 15. And the four angels were loosed, which were prepared for an hour and a day and a month and a year for to slay the third part of the men. The time had come. The hour was up. Remember the martyrs that had cried, how long, how long? He said, now you just be patient for a little season. It's not quite coming yet. It's coming, but it hasn't quite come yet. It will. Hold things back till we get the saved and the redeemed taken care of. Now the time has come. And he says, let them go. So here comes these locust army, these horsemen, these chariots, these fierce, barbaric powers of destruction. And they've been let loose. And notice, the number of the army of the horsemen were 200,000, and I heard the number of them. In other words, they were just innumerable. They were so overwhelming in force and power and number. And thus I saw the horses in the vision, and them that sat on them, having breastplates of fire, and of jacinth and brimstone. And the heads of the horses were the heads of lions. Great power. And out of their mouths issued fire and smoke and brimstone. Almost as if they were ravaging dragons of some kind. You try to picture such an image as that coming against you and knowing you are his target. Now that wouldn't be a very comforting thing to see, would it? And by these three was the third part of the men killed, by the fire, by the smoke, and by the brimstone which issued out of their mouths. What a powerful earth, but what did they call that policy? Scorch earth policy. Remember what the scorch earth was? So when you retreated, you just burned up everything, left nothing for anybody that was of any value whatsoever. Like Sherman's hideous march to the sea through the great state of Georgia. And like the Russians did when the Germans were coming in, they didn't give them anything. They left them a scorched earth. Well, that was what this army was going to do to the land of Palestine. Just destroy it all the way through. And for their power is in their mouth and in their tails. And for their tails were likened to serpents, and had heads and with them to do hurt. Now there were some that were spared, at least some that would still survive. They were not all wiped out. But notice, it didn't do them a bit. It didn't change them a bit. It didn't alter their behavior. They were headstrong, kept going. The rest of the men which were not killed by these plagues yet repented not of the work of their hands. They could see what their policies of opposition to God and persecution and their wickedness and their hypocrisy and their degeneracy. They could see what it was bringing upon them. And even in the face of it, they didn't change one whit. They would not repent. That they should not worship devils and idols of gold and silver and brass and stone and of wood, which neither can see nor hear nor walk. Look how John pictures these idols. They're just dumb idols. There's no life in them. Can't see, hear, nor walk. Neither repented they of their murders, nor their sorceries, nor their fornication, nor their thefts. In spite of this coming devastation, which they could even witness before it culminated and climaxed and finished everything, they could see all that. And they just kept on their way right on. It makes you We're full of them. Most of them. Just hell-bent and determined to just go on to our own destruction in spite of anything anybody can say, do, or think. Could see the results of it. Okay? Wound up just right. We'll start with chapter 10 next time. Now in chapter 10, let me give you this preview. We had seven seals. Six seals,